learn how to get out of your own way. For you see, there are things that we do to hurt our chances for success in life. Therefore, it is not about how to get others out of my way that I might be successful. But it does mean taking responsibility for my life, opening my eyes to see how I may have sabotaged my own life without realizing it. Self-sabotage is common to all people. It is not bad luck. It is not that the successful always do things right. In fact, rarely is the problem really another problem or circumstance, but it's perhaps how we respond to those problems. We need to learn to prevent self-sabotage so that God may be glorified in our lives. Perhaps you've watched people over the years and you thought to yourself, well, you know, I'm not surprised that they had disaster, constant disaster. Maybe it just seems like they set themselves up for it without even realizing it. And yet, look at a man like David. David was a man who fought tremendous opposing forces. He fought a lion, he fought a bear, he fought Goliath, a man who was just short of 10 feet. He fled from Saul, he fled from Absalom, his own son. The book of Psalms shows how he was sick constantly, even to the point of death. Yet, if we were to make a list of the top 10 most successful people in the Bible, we'd probably put David in that list, and probably pretty close to the top of that list. Solomon is a man who became successful in spite of trouble. The trouble where he had caused his own sabotage. The book of Ecclesiastes is an excellent book on this. It shows how his self-sabotage is open for the world to see. He wrote a book and God stuck it in the Bible so that we could see his life exposed and see how he sabotaged his own life. You see, at first, when you read about the life of Solomon, he got out of his own way. Many got in his way, but then later he realized what he was doing, and he got out of his own way again. I want to cover tonight several things on how we can hurt our own lives, how we can sabotage our own lives. And the first one is this: a poor understanding of people. President Teddy Roosevelt said, "The most important single ingredient in the formula of success is knowing how to get along with people." When I read his quotation, I thought to myself, I wonder if that's why Jesus said in Mark 12:31 that the second greatest commandment is to love your neighbor yourself. The only one that's greater than that, the only command is God, the one to love God. And is not the rest of the Bible showing us how to fulfill that second greatest commandment? And it's dealing with people. And of course, in dealing with people, we need to be able to understand people. And I think if we understand three things about people, it'll help us to understand them better. First of all, is people are peculiar. People will spend money they do not have to buy things they do not need to impress people they do not know. They want to sit in the front of the bus, in the back of the church building, and stand in the middle of the road. They think their problems are the biggest, their jokes are the funniest, and their kids are the smartest. You know, that one has to apply to me. Forgetting these things, though, can lead us to failure in dealing with other people. And it's impossible to live life without people contact. So the key is not to run away, but rather for us to understand. Secondly, to understand about people, is we need to see that people usually see things from their own eyes. I mean, don't we all do that? I look at everything, my problems, my successes, whatever, from my perspective. And rarely do we think that we're wrong. I was once a third party to two disagreeing men. And finally, one of them said to the other, will you just think that everything you believe is the truth? And I thought to myself, well, I think everybody believes that. So finally I said to the one who made that charge, do you knowingly believe any error? Can you tell me something that you believe is error and you believe it? And he said, no. So I said, okay, so everything that you hold to and believe, you think is the truth. And that didn't change or didn't help the argument that they were having, but I thought that was interesting. Thirdly, most people are insecure. They resist change and they fear everything and everyone but God. I believe that the book of Proverbs is a wonderful book on understanding other people. I'd encourage you to read Proverbs. In fact, what Carrie and I were doing before I moved over here, and I hope to resume when we all get set up over here, is every morning we would read a chapter of Proverbs for that day. In other words, for that day of the month. Today is August 24th. So we would read Proverbs 24. And within that chapter, we would find a verse that deals with either a problem that we think we have or just something that we think we need to memorize. And so we'd each pick one. I'd go type that verse on the back of an old business card that I would gather from other people. And then we'd just memorize that throughout that day and look at it when we get the chance. And then the next day it'd be a new one. And I'll tell you, the book of Proverbs provides so many insights, not only on your own successes and failures, but in how to deal with other people and how to understand them. Let me just give you two samples from the 13th chapter, verse 12. A hope deferred makes the heart sick. But when the desire comes, it is a tree of life. I remember when I read that, I understood some of my own hurts in my own life, and it helped me to understand how I've hurt other people. When I gave them hope and didn't fulfill it, and how it made their hearts sick, it helped me to understand it. Verse 20 of that same chapter. He who walks with wise men will be wise. But the companion of fools will be destroyed. Secondly, we sabotage our lives by blaming others. Is that not the story of Adam and Eve? In Genesis chapter 3? And has anything changed? Adam blamed Eve. Eve blamed the serpent. And the serpent, the most wicked one in the whole story, didn't blame anybody. It's as though he knew that he was responsible. And I don't see where any of that has actually changed. We still do that. We often cannot see our own selves, and so it's hard for us to take the blame. But when we blame someone else, we give that person control over our lives. And we play the part of the victim. When we blame others, we fail to see the true problem, and so we can't fix it. And so the problem keeps occurring. Thirdly, lack of focus. We can sabotage our lives by lack of focus. And this, again, I'd like to take from the book of Proverbs, the 20th chapter of Proverbs, verse 18. Plans are established by counsel. By wise counsel, wage war. Counsel helps us to be focused. In fact, the focused person is one who's seeking counsel. The one who is seeking advice. Who is trying to get input from others. And so if a person doesn't have that, they're going to lack focus. Which will lead to a waste of time. I read somewhere where someone has 37 point something hours of discretionary time per week. Meaning time when you're not sleeping, eating, or working. And so I figured that out for myself. I said, oh, I'm going to look at it on a per day basis. And I figured that it had to be at least 5 hours per day. At least that amount where you're not working, eating, or sleeping. What are we doing with those precious hours? Well, lack of focus will cause us to be totally tied up in trivial things. And to where our lives are not wise to success. In Ephesians chapter 5. The Bible encourages us, I believe, to be focused, using our time wisely. For if we don't use time, as you know, we can't get back what we lost, like perhaps we can money. You lose money, you can somehow get it back, work back. But once time is gone, it's gone forever. And so in Ephesians 5, 15 and 16, the Spirit said through Paul, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as wise, but as not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." Number four, lacking information. When we lack information, we will often twist facts to suit theories instead of theories to suit facts. Without good information, we will not see things as they really are, but the way we want to see them. Now, in my opinion, evolution, the general theory of evolution, fits that scenario. But in Numbers chapter 32, Moses condemned the 2.5 tribes of Israel who had decided, we don't want to go into the land of Canaan. We like the east side of Canaan. And Moses thought that that meant, we're going to stay over here. We're not going to fight as God told us to do, the Canaanites in the land of Canaan. You have to do that yourself, the rest of you tribes. And Moses was angry. And he rebuked those 2.5 tribes quite severely for it until he got all his information together. When he realized the whole truth and how those 2.5 tribes were actually going to volunteer to be in the front lines, and how they had set up a certain memorial site so that their children would not forget how they all belonged to one another and so forth and so on, then he was pacified. But when he lacked that information, self-sabotage was on its way. And that would, of course, in the case of Moses, lead to sabotage of Israel. Number five, being influenced by negative people. Again, the book of Numbers, chapter 13. There is the classic example of these type of people who can turn around large groups of people from the way of success when they allow themselves to be influenced by negative people. And this is the story of the 12 spies. And remember the 10 who came back with a bad report? Listen to verse 27 and follow. "Then they told him and said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. Excuse me. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks by the Jordan.' Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.' And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land, which they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak who came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so were we in their sight.'" And of course, you know what happened from there. These 10 men were able to cause several million people to forget what God had just done 2 years earlier in taking them out of the superpower of the world, Egypt, with those 10 plagues, opening up the Red Sea, allowing Israel to go through, killing the Egyptians when they tried to follow, and all the wonderful ways that he had provided for them from the 2 years from the Red Sea crossing to now when they're at the border of Canaan. Because they allowed those negative and faithless men to affect them. So our associates can be our greatest asset or liability. Again, I would say that the book of Proverbs is so good on that. It talks about, you know, associating with fools and associating with the wise. In fact, one of the verses I read earlier made that very point and how they will affect us. A discouraging player in the huddle can ruin a team. And I'll tell you, that's one reason why I left the North Long Beach congregation many years ago. The congregation did nothing. They ceased helping a children's home. They ceased supporting mission works. They wouldn't help overseas works, in spite of the fact that their congregation was the highest at that time. It was the highest in its 50-year history. They said, no, we can't do this, can't do that. They just spun their wheels and didn't want to get out of the mud. When I went to Nile Street, though, in 1983, it was so much different. The congregation had very little money, but they knew where they wanted to go, and they believed they could achieve it. And they did. We became self-supporting. We eventually had a radio program, which I'm still actually doing for them. They published the Bible Meditator. They eventually supported several other works, made numerous building improvements, and so on. Literally, they had said, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it. And the Lord provided for them, and it was done. Number six, another self-sabotage thing, is expecting failure. A pessimist's tombstone said, I expected this. And so that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Again, I ask you to remember the 10 spies in Numbers chapter 13. Notice a church or a business or really anything that's falling apart, and you'll notice that they often expect the worst to happen, and it does. Because when we say, I think this is the way it's going to turn out, it's going to be bad, we set our sights on that, and that's all we think about. But when we expect success, then we think about success, and we work toward that goal, and we eventually reach that. Number seven, being unable to learn from others. The book of Ecclesiastes was written that we might learn from another man. I once had a man tell me that he didn't want to learn from other people's mistakes. He wanted to make them himself. And I thought, why would you think like that? I didn't understand. That didn't make sense to me. And I first thought of the book of Ecclesiastes. Why should I go through the depressing, agonizing, discouraging time that Solomon went through when I don't have to? I can read his book and see what the problem was and learn from it. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 9, through the end of the book, chapter 12, verse 14, is the conclusion of Solomon's journey. And do you know what he tells us? I mean, the whole book is getting to this point of just saying, remember God. Look at how depressing my life has been and how I have tried to find fulfillment and success in everything except for in God. So remember the Lord, he says. And especially at the end there, he speaks to the younger people. And if you are younger, don't despise when an older man like Solomon has to say to us. He said that there's nothing new under the sun. Sometimes one generation says, well, the problems we're facing, you didn't face. But when Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun, you know, when you live a few amount of years, you begin to learn that that really is true. Every generation has, in principle, the same problems that it faces. Learning from others, though, requires humility. It is an admission that I don't know everything. Henry Ford said, if there is anyone's secret to success, it lies in the ability to get the other person's point of view and see things from his angle as well as from yours. And so if we do that, we can learn from other people. He who is unable to learn from others has three eye problems. They think that they're infallible. These words start with I. They think they're infallible. They are inflexible. And they are insecure. I once knew a man who had the attitude that, why should I listen to you? I know more than you do. You have nothing to offer to me. And today, His life is absolutely miserable. He's a miserable man. So sad. I feel sorry for him in a lot of ways. Number eight, self-sabotage can come from refusing to take a risk. Excuse me. Charles Lindbergh said, "What kind of man would live where there is no daring? I don't believe in taking foolish chances, but nothing can be accomplished if we don't take any chances at all." Look at Israel in the wilderness. They were unwilling to go through a wilderness to get to their own home. They wanted to go back to Egypt where they thought life was better, and they refused to fight the Canaanites after the report of the 10 spies. And let me take you back to the book of Numbers, this time chapter 14. Because now it shows Joshua and Caleb and how they were willing to live, which is contrasted with the 10 spies. These men were living by faith. And what I think is interesting is that we know who Joshua and Caleb are. If I never even said anything about the spies, you would have known, oh, those are the 2 spies who gave a good report. You know their names. But can anyone here give one name of one of the 10 spies? You know, we just don't remember those men because they died in infamy. Anyways, in Numbers 14, verses 7 through 9, Joshua and Caleb spoke saying this, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." See, they were willing to go forth. They were willing to look at danger. They were willing to take the risk because in this case, they knew the Lord was with them. And they succeeded. Number 9, undisciplined living. Vince Lombardi said, "I've never known a man worth his salt who in the long run, deep down in his heart, didn't appreciate the grind, the discipline. I firmly believe that any man's finest hour, this greatest fulfillment to all he holds dear, is the moment when he has worked his heart out in a good cause and lies exhausted on the field of battle, victorious." 1 Corinthians 9 shows why Paul was so successful. He's another one of those men that we would put in the top 10 list of the most successful people in the Bible. He said in verse 27, "But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." In Matthew 23, Jesus shows the problem of the Pharisees because they sabotaged their lives with undisciplined spiritual living. In verse 25, Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence." Undisciplined living, and perhaps you've seen this in your own life when you weren't disciplined, can become costly in time, energy, goals, and moods. And boy, do we need to master our moods or they will master us. Many times we fail because we let our moods run our lives. In other words, it should be that we act and then we feel, but often we think, "I will feel first and then I will act." Number 10. Self-sabotage can come from being stopped by failure. Failures and mistakes are a part of life, aren't they? But the attitude that we have toward them is what separates the successful from the unsuccessful. Proverbs 24 has a proverb that, for me, was so insightful. I was so glad I discovered this verse because it helped me to realize that maybe I wasn't doing so bad. It's one of those passages that just provides a lot of comfort because it says, now, here's the way it can be. Proverbs 24:16. Listen to this. "For a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again. But the wicked shall fall by calamity. Now, I've read that many years ago after I had failed at something. I had fallen down. And I thought, that's it. I'll never be successful. I won't accomplish anything. And then I read this passage. And what caught my attention was that the righteous fall seven times. And of course, it could be much more than that, or it could be less. Often it will probably be much more. But the point that he's making is, in order to fall the second time, what does it mean had to happen after the first time? They fell, but they got back up. In order for them to have fallen the third time, it meant that after the second time, they had to get back up so they could fall the third time. They fall constantly, but they get back up. Whereas he says, the wicked, calamity comes and they're ruined. They're destroyed. So the righteous aren't necessarily sinful or failures if they fall. Solomon did not say that the righteous never fail. They fail and try again. But people stopped by failure see it as an attack on their competence. They had one success and two failures. So they conclude, that's not worth it. And they quit. People not stopped by failure admit their mistakes, are ready to get on with life, and know that every life has both success and failure. They see, okay, I had one success and two failures. Now, if I keep that up, that means I'll have 100 failures, but 50 successes. And to them, that's a reason to keep on going. They remember that Thomas Edison had thousands of failures in order to give us the successes that we all enjoy today. Think about this as I come to a close here on this last particular point. What failure does not and does mean? It does not mean that my life is a total failure, but it means I have not succeeded yet. It does not mean that I have not accomplished anything, but it does mean that I have learned. It does not mean that I was a fool, but that I was willing to take a risk. It does not mean that I am a disgrace, but I was not content with the status quo and made an effort to improve things. It does not mean the original idea was necessarily wrong, but maybe I need to approach it differently. It does not mean that I do not have any good ideas, but it does mean that I am not perfect. It does not mean that my life is ruined, but that I have a good excuse for starting over. Excuse me again. It does not mean that I should give up, but try harder. It does not mean I will never succeed, but I need more patience. And finally, it does not mean that God has forsaken me, but He has a better idea. And in all those things, I would say, remember Moses. Remember when he was 40 years old, he tried to separate two Israelites who were fighting. He wanted to help them. And it wasn't until 40 years later that God used him. Not to help two men, but a whole nation of people. When he was 80. We really don't know of the successes of Moses until he was 80 years old. Let me encourage you, therefore, to stop sabotaging your life if you think that you have been. Read the books of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, and you will gain much wisdom. And if you're ready to start over and need our help and want our prayers, please come forward now as we stand and sing.